Blog Talk Radio.
But on this day in 1946 in Fulton, Missouri, then Prime Minister, Winston Churchill was out. Clement Attlee succeeded him. Clement Attlee was the Labor Party, but Churchill was the old anti-communist warrior who used to say, Bolshevism, we should have strangled it in its cradle. And he was always anti-communist, but he worked with Stalin during World War II because he hated Hitler more. Anyway, after the war, he came to Fulton, Missouri, to give a speech. Harry Truman was there, the president. I think it was Westminster College. And he uttered what has become the phrase associated with him about an iron curtain has rung down across Eastern Europe. Well, the term iron curtain did not originate. He didn't compose that term, create that term. He's not the author of that term. It dates back to the 1920, a woman named Snowden, who's an author, wrote a book on Bolshevism in Russia, and she alluded to the term Iron Curtain. Other authors have alluded to it before Churchill. Also, Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi propaganda minister. There was a clip, unfortunately, I misplaced it, where he talks about an Iron Curtain at the Soviet Union. In World War II and after World War II would ring down on Eastern Europe. This was in February 1945, I believe. Also on this day, it's an interesting date. Now, unfortunately, we can't find it, so we'll play it Friday. But anyway, on this day, Joseph Stalin died, but he eclipsed the great Russian composer Serge Prokofiev. Prokofiev is famous because he wrote a lot of music. After the Bolshevik Revolution, he fled, like a lot of Russian intellectuals and aristocrats, west to Paris. But he came back. I don't know why. And he survived the Stalin's purges and Stalin's attacks on music and trying to be a music critic. But what's interesting about Prokofiev and his connection to the FBI is that Prokofiev wrote an opera called The Love for Three Oranges. And the march was used for the FBI's radio program, The FBI in Peace and War. Here's the original march from the archives, and then we'll play an interview from Serge Prokofiev, and then the FBI's radio program. Thank you. composer Serge Prokofiev.
Well, I think in some ways he's right, because in every country there are some composers of little value who are always reactionary and malevolent and not interesting at all. But I don't think I'm doing it myself reactionary art.
That last phrase was, "but I don't think I'm doing myself reactionary art." He said there are poor artists in every country and also good ones, and that the good ones would live on. Bland relayed another question, whether composers in the Soviet Union were free to write anything they pleased, or whether they were ordered to compose a certain way. Prokofiev answered,
"But certainly nobody orders me anything, so I'm writing what I want."
Nobody orders me anything, so I'm writing what I want.
That was Serge Prokofiev with his English, like a lot of his Russian was his first language. Now, here is the FBI's program, the FBI and Peace and War.
The FBI and Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, $25,000 bond.
I've just come from the United States Commissioner's office. He said you refused counsel when you were arraigned before him this morning. Violation of the espionage laws is a major charge. I don't have to tell you that. And if Barry Calvin should fail to pull through, you're sure you don't want to change your mind about retaining counsel?
I'm sure.
Now, here is the theme again played, The Love of Three Oranges. Interestingly, there was a famous spy trial and investigation by the FBI in the early part of World War II, and it was called The House on 42nd Street. And the film was and the story is based on the Nazis' attempt to steal Tommy bomb secrets and the technical material we were developing at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And the woman, the spy, the woman dressed in men's clothing, there was some changes in the film. But what was interesting was the music used for this film, The House on 42nd Street, was from Richard Strauss's Festliche Prelude. Richard Strauss was the, one of the greatest modern romantic German composers, and he stayed in Germany. He was old. He was in his probably pushing 80. He stayed in Nazi Germany, and he was becoming senile, and he hadn't written. He wrote one more piece before he died in 1950. But anyway, here is that the German music, which is interesting, used for the FBI's spy film, The House on 42nd Street. That was it. Cut short, and let's see if we got that Iron Curtain speech of Churchill. Just a brief excerpt because it was a long speech. And we still have. I'm still getting accustomed to the new system here. Let's see. Brief. Was here. This is a problem. We'll probably have to play it Friday because I did promise. And I think it's really important. Anyway, so now among the other issues, we've got these talking heads. Even we've got one guy over in the Ukraine. He's got a law degree, but we don't know what he did besides that real work. And certainly he's displaying his ignorance about the Ukraine and the history of Russia. The last time the British and the French warred with Russia was the Crimean War. And with what the Russians tried to, they wanted to bring their fleet out into the Mediterranean out of the Black Sea. Crimea was largely Tartar, but it's still part of Russia. Ukraine is a no man's land. It went back and forth between Poland and Russia. I understand that half of the country, the west, western part of Ukraine, is Catholic, Roman Catholic, and leans toward Europe and the Germans. The eastern part is Russian Orthodox religion and leans toward Russia. So maybe the best thing is, if we want peace in that region, is to broker a let the country be divided, like they did in Yugoslavia and in Czechoslovakia. In other places, that maybe this is the best way to deal with the situation. Certainly, this business about we're going to have democracy for all these people, and we got half the country that wants to be with the Russians, which is still totalitarian, and the other half that wants to embrace the West. But again, you don't hear in the media of the history of this area. Now, in World War II, well, prior to that, after Stalin, who died on this day, wanted to collectivize the farms, and there was resistance throughout Russia, especially in the Ukraine, which was known as the breadbasket of Russia, and that's why Hitler wanted it also. But what happened was Stalin decided to enforce a deliberate famine. An estimated 10 million people, Ukrainians, were starved to death. Children, women, their cattle was taken, horses were taken, their pigs. Horrible, horrible things that Stalin did. And now, so the Ukrainians haven't forgotten that, even to this day. In World War II, when Hitler launched Operation Barbarossa, which was to supposedly destroy his former ally, Joseph Stalin. Now, in the 30s, Joseph Stalin allowed the Wehrmacht, because the Wehrmacht was limited to 100,000 men, he allowed the German armed forces to test and train in Russia. And there was this Moscow-Berlin Axis Pact, which horrified everybody in, just before World War II. And Hitler double-crossed Stalin and launched in June of 1940 Operation Barbarossa. And they were very successful until they got to Stalingrad. They were repelled at the states of the gates of Moscow. Also, the Ukrainians, a lot of them embraced the Nazis because they thought that they were getting even with Stalin, and that would throw off Stalin's yoke. Well, what happened was the Nazis treated them like slobs and conquered people and murdered and slaughtered and enslaved a lot of them. Many of them were forced to work in the German factories, and there was torture, terrorism, extermination, especially of Jews. So, you know, all this plays into this history of that region, and none of this is being brought up by these talking heads. It's really a disservice to American media. Now, among the other things I was going to talk about today was we hear about the San Francisco police. Six of them have been charged with public corruption and shaking down poor people and all that sort of thing. And the impression is, oh, the San Francisco Police Force is the most corrupt, certainly on the West Coast. Well, that's not true. The most corrupt police force, and this was done by this poll was done and research was done by several sources, relevant resourceful sources. Most corrupt police force was in New Orleans, where the cops were among the poorest paid in the country. In San Francisco, the cops can make start at $75,000 a year and go up. New York City, I think they start about the same amount. In Chicago, they start about the same way. Of course, all those cities, New York has had the Serpico scandal, the theft of the heroin, the French Connection scandal of 40 pounds of heroin was in police locker and was missing. And, of course, two famous movies were made, one with Gene Hackman. The other one scandal, of course, was Serpico, where which was starred Al Pacino, and it depicted accurately. He was an undercover narc who was trying to bust drug dealers, and he was set up by his own fellow officers and severely wounded, and he resigned from the force on disability. In fact, he had a English sheepdog named Alfie, I think, a famous movie, and he's Serpico, I believe, is living in upstate New York. There was a Chicago police scandal, the Somerdale scandal, in the late 50s, where this was the Somerdale station was in northwest Chicago, which is a quiet area where they sent cops who were getting ready to retire but hadn't reached retirement age. And so these cops discovered a burglar named Morrison, a diminutive guy, and they put him to work enhancing their retirement. And that scandal blew up, and a Republican district attorney, Benjamin Adamowski, decided to go after the Kelly Daly machine. And Richard Daly outsmarted him by bringing in a professor from the University of Chicago, University of California, excuse me, Orlando W. Wilson, who chaired a committee to search the country for a new police superintendent to get rid of Timothy O'Connor, who was blameless in this. He was just a toy of the machine, and he was sacrificed. He had to retire, and they chose Orlando W. Wilson as Chicago's police commissioner, and the first thing he did was move the police superintendent's office out of City Hall and over to the police central headquarters at 11th and State. I remember that vaguely. I was in college at the time, or starting college. What happened was Orlando W. Wilson had a background. He was a colonel in the United States Army and part in charge of military police in Germany after World War II, so Scandinavian heritage, like a lot of these guys, like Warren. Anyway, he retired in the 70s, and some of the Chicago police, I guess I'm told, went back to some of their old ways. It isn't Chicago or New York or even Los Angeles, which is the most corrupt police force in America. There also were some problems in Montreal, Canada, where the mayor up there is named Drapeau, and he ran he was known as the Daily of Canada, and he had some problems with his police force. So it happens, and there are a lot of good policemen. When a guy and a policeman or woman puts on a uniform at night, they don't know if they're coming home in their car or coming home in a coffin. That's the way things are. So we will end with our usual. We'll be back Friday at 3:30. We'll try to find that Churchill Iron Curtain speech, and we're still looking for the Goebbels speech where he talks about an Iron Curtain. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We have refocused features in that, which would deal with political corruption, video voyeurs, public corruption, judicial corruption, public policy issues, should bicyclists be charged to go on the Golden Gate Bridge? Should bicyclists be required to have insurance, liability insurance, license plates, and be prosecuted? They're not being prosecuted because the police have been intimidated by this bicycle coalition agenda, which is a bunch of known as the latte leisure class because they have a lot of disposable income, and some of them are into cocaine. It used to be in San Francisco that the people using bicycles were dope dealers because the cops couldn't catch them with their cars, and the dope dealers operated on their bicycles after hours. Now, the other thing that's coming up is this whole business about these cars. Years ago, 30 years ago, Volkswagen, Volvo, Toyota, they made smaller cars. They weren't the muscle cars that we are seeing today. And what's happened is we have an epidemic of reckless driving and also reckless bicycling and stupid pedestrians who are on their cell phones or their tablets and are not paying attention to the rules of the street and following the lights and looking out for their own safety. They are adults, but they're not acting that way. And, of course, we have these people, especially the BMW drivers. There has been a study, it seems to be their validity to it, that the worst BMW drivers are these men between 20 in the 20s and up up into the 50s. For them, they drive like they've got a testosterone rush. And for the women who were 30, 40 years ago, they weren't driving these powerful cars, and they're using these SUVs. And frankly, the way some of them act, it's as though they had the monthly rush or a hormonal problem. Their attitude is just as bad, and they're handling vehicles that they don't know how to handle. And a lot of people are being hit by these out of control SUVs driven by women who are not who can't handle them capably and safely. So we'll get into that. We'll end with our usual politics and poker, and then focus with a new channel called Amicus Veritas Poopery, which will be animals, authors, some interesting backgrounds and interviews that I've done with animal related and public environmental issues that I did work on in the media in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and here in the United States. So we'll end with politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
We'll be back Friday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Stay safe. It's Peter Paul Brazola. Good night. Mm-hmm.